to the Cognitive Warrior Podcast, where we present and discuss current events involving law enforcement and the communities we serve. In our first two episodes, we focused on the current discussion regarding the warrior and the guardian. Our premise is the warrior ethos, when implemented correctly, is the ethos this nation deserves and demands from our law enforcement personnel, and quite truthfully, should demand from every citizen as well. Today, we'll take a detailed look into the written agreement between law enforcement and our communities, known as the Peelian Principles. So really quickly, Sir Robert Peel was a two-time serving Prime Minister in the United Kingdom. He became known as the father of modern-day British policing when he founded the Metropolitan Police Act of 1829. Prior to this act, there was little to no uniformity in policing, either in enforcement, pay, hiring, etc. There was also a strong belief and evidence that the police at the time were relying on certain criminal elements for their payments to earn their salaries. Peel not only formulated nine principles to guide the conduct of not just the police, but the citizens as well, but he also improved the overall justice process. So let's jump right in and take a look at the principles, which are still very much applicable to today's law enforcement and community roles and relationships. And these principles were and have been adapted by law enforcement in this nation. That being said, however, it is time for us to go back, refamiliarize ourselves with these, both as professional police officers and citizens in this nation. So the first one says to prevent crime and disorder as an alternative to their oppression by military force and severity of legal punishment, that is the purpose for law enforcement and law enforcement agencies. So for many countries early on, the military was the primary source for policing citizens. We have seen throughout history this does not work at all. For Europe at the time, the police were not paid necessarily from the government and relied on needing a relationship with some criminal elements in order to gain payment. So even though we're talking about the early 1800s, there's still parts of that country where wealthy merchants were paying for police services just like the Romans did, except with the military. So we still haven't progressed very far from that aspect of policing when Sir Robert Peel comes in and makes this adjustment and notices and notifies everybody that law enforcement there is to prevent crime and disorder as an alternative to utilizing the military. When we listen to the discussions occurring today, we have these rumblings about abolishing the police. Well, if we seriously entertain this, how do we provide protection for the law-abiding citizens from crime and criminals? We sure don't want to use the military. Not that they're not capable of doing a good job, it's just, as we've discussed, their mission is just too different from that of policing. We have already established this. So who's going to do this then? We have tried in recent history to utilize private companies for the privatization of prisons and some police forces, and it's been fraught with corruption and it has not worked. Again, when you have private entities do this, the mission changes. It becomes about making money, not preventing crime. That's an issue. So abolishing the police in this country is not the answer. So principle number one establishes why we're using law enforcement agencies. Principle number two states to recognize always that the power of the police to fulfill their functions and duties is dependent on public approval of their existence, actions, and behavior, and on their ability to secure and maintain public respect. So principle number two cuts right to the heart of some of today's issues in law enforcement communities. One of the issues eroding away at this principle is the unwillingness of leadership from all walks of life, whether it be the profession of law enforcement, city governments, or even leadership within our communities, to be open and honest and informed about what transpires in the world of criminal behavior, law enforcement, and communities. Overall, leadership has failed to properly articulate what it is police officers are doing, how they are actually trained, and what they are really facing. Our nation has been through this once before. It was the Vietnam War. As a nation, we thought we understood war until we saw it, every night, in color, and it was very real. Vietnam was the first time this happened. And as a result, the leadership simply said, hey, you don't understand, you're not a soldier. And the end result was our Vietnam veterans paid that price and continue to pay it today because we didn't take the time to explain to them what was really going on when we talk about war. Here we are today with law enforcement. We thought we understood police work until we saw it. Every minute of the day now, in video, without context, and it was very real. Once again, just like our leadership during the Vietnam War, they failed to properly explain to the citizens and simply said, don't you worry, you just don't understand, you're not an officer. So basically, we learned absolutely nothing from our Vietnam experience, and just like those veterans continue to pay the price, so too are the law enforcement members in our society. So when we talk about public approval, it's difficult to get approval when we're not upfront and honest with what's actually happening and what's really going on. So until we get to a point where we can tell our folks, our citizens, and our communities what's really happening, i.e. gang issues and things that we continue to bury or claim are not a big deal, we will continue to have an issue with gaining their respect and their understanding of our actions and behavior and existence. So already we're only into the second principle, and we can see where we have started to stray from these core principles, which are critical to a successful community that is safe and secure. So this brings us to principle number 3, which states to recognize always that to secure and maintain the respect and approval of the public means also the securing of the willing cooperation of the public in the task of securing observance of laws. This principle sets the stage for principle number 7, which we will get to shortly. So if we look at this from the aspect of the mission, again, using the warrior ethos, which is available to any citizen willing to put in the effort, in order to gain the cooperation, and I say commitment, not just cooperation, but commitment of the citizens, they need to be just as committed to the mission of keeping the peace while maintaining law, order, and civility as law enforcement officers are. Right now, civility is the peace we are struggling with, and without it, we will continue to be emotionally charged and to emotionally charge others. Science has shown us emotion overrides logic every time. If we can get you emotional about any issue, you will ignore or skew the facts. So once again, in principle number 3, it's difficult for the community and the profession to approve their existence and how they operate without understanding what the mission is in the first place. So let's look at principle number 4, and it states to recognize always that the extent to which the cooperation of the public can be secured diminishes proportionately the necessity of the use of physical force and compulsion for achieving police objectives. So this principle, again, is pretty straightforward, and I replace the word with cooperation with the word commitment. It's more stable and stronger, invoking a more proactive stance from our citizens and our law enforcement officers. So when the citizenry is committed to the mission, they are more likely to provide information when needed, and more importantly, from a proactive and preemptive standpoint, which is our goal, to prevent crime, our community is more likely to take an active role in raising our children and to get our citizens committed to understanding appropriate behavior. Now, this will not greatly impact those who choose to violate the law, but the message becomes very clear what the outcome is when one chooses to become a criminal and then maintains that character once noticed. These folks will continue to resist and require law enforcement to respond with the various appropriate de-escalation techniques, and we will discuss force and de-escalation in a future podcast because that's a critical issue we need to clarify. The bottom line for this principle is when the public is committed or at least cooperative, meaning following lawful commands, law enforcement does not have a reason nor do they have the ability to respond physically. Unfortunately, today what we have is we have a society that has not only said it's acceptable, but has basically said that you should physically and verbally resist the police. We cannot have that in a society. One of the big issues right now is people are not happy with the justice system. So we're going to move on to principle number 5, which states to seek and preserve public favor, not by pandering to public opinion, but by constantly demonstrating absolute impartial service to law in complete independence of policy and without regard to the justice or injustice of the substance of the individual laws. By ready offering of individual service and friendship to all members of the public, without regard to their wealth or social standing, by ready exercise of courtesy and friendly good humor, and by ready offering of individual sacrifice in protecting and preserving life. That's a pretty long one, but there are some key elements in there that we are violating today, especially when it comes to pandering to public opinion. I think we are neck deep in that from our leadership, where we are hell-bent on making sure people are happy, even though our crime rate is much higher than it should be. So again, some of this has to do with many of our citizens being upset with the criminal justice system. And the name alone sets us up for failure. I mean, I'm not concerned with justice for the criminal. Simply justice will do. So we should probably consider dropping the name criminal from criminal justice and just call it the justice system. So what we're talking about is the discussion of the unfairness of the laws and how the courts are unfairly penalizing certain groups more than others is not an issue the police can change. Yet they are the ones society is lashing out at and demonizing. With that, however, as a profession, we can do a better job of maintaining the proper professionalism when carrying out the mission of law enforcement. This principle also addresses the need to engage the public properly which need to be much more than donuts with a deputy and coffee with a cop. Those are turning out to be programs that do little to nothing to get the public involved with the mission. What's interesting is these programs fall directly in line with the premise of the 21st Century Policing Report. They claim they have a study that showed the public was not as concerned with the crime rate as they were with how they felt they were treated by law enforcement. Too many leaders in this profession and in our communities have latched onto this and have done a masterful job of making their communities feel good about a high crime rate. This is unacceptable. I'm not saying we shouldn't have the donut with a deputy and the coffee with a cop. What I'm saying is this is not a program, it is a regular way of doing business. These things should be happening every day in the community and anytime a citizen sees an officer. Our leadership needs to allow our officers to have the time to just sit and talk a few minutes. So let's put this another way that might make a little more sense. Let's say we have a cancer patient and we put them on morphine and laughing gas and ask, hey, how are you feeling? That's our question. And they're going to tell you, I feel great, but the reality of it is they're still dying. This feeling of feeling good with a high crime rate is short term. Treating cancer is painful, unpleasant, and when asked, the patient will tell you, I feel horrible. But they'll also tell you in that process, the cancer is no longer growing. As this continues, then we continue to treat the issue at hand with real engagement by engaging that disease. I don't feel good, but the cancer is shrinking. And then later you get, I feel better, and the cancer is gone. Right now, law enforcement leadership and our community leadership has made everyone feel better without making things better. There's a big difference. Fighting crime is the same thing. We've got to start engaging our public to make things better, not just make them feel better. And in the community I'm in right now, our leadership has done a masterful job of this, and nobody really cares that the crime rate is still high, and they're willing to put up with this stuff because it makes them feel good. So now we get into principle number 6, which states to use physical force only when the exercise of persuasion, advice, and warning is found to be insufficient to obtain public cooperation to an extent necessary to secure observance of law or to restore order, and to use only the minimum degree of physical force which is necessary on any particular occasion for achieving a police objective. So right now in our communities, we are seeing this principle being presented in a manner that's not just unfair, but completely unsafe for all parties involved. As it's being discussed, we're getting citizens to believe that every police encounter should require verbal de-escalation first, then maybe empty hands, then pepper spray, then taser, and so on. We cannot have this as a step-by-step procedure. I can tell you right now, if someone was punching you into unconsciousness or stabbing you to death, or sexually assaulting you, the last thing you're going to want is for the police officer on the scene to try and talk to the attacker first, then try pepper spray, then try the taser, and so on. You're going to want it to stop and stop right now. What this says is sometimes the urgency is so great there is not time to start trying to have a conversation. Anyone with teenagers knows that talking is not always enough to change behavior. We need to understand how officers are truly trained, not how leadership tries to explain it, because the explanations from leadership tend to be sorely lacking in understanding of what training actually occurs, as in my experience, many command staff don't even attend the same training that their officers do. So now we're going to get into principle number 7, which I think is one of the key principles of the 9. What it states is as follows. To maintain at all times a relationship with the public that gives reality to the historic tradition that the police are the public and the public are the police. The police being only members of the public who are paid to give full-time attention to duties which are incumbent on every citizen in the interest of community welfare and existence. Again, this principle may be the most important of the 9. This is the principle which ties into the warrior ethos and the responsibility of all citizens to be proactively and properly involved with keeping each other safe. This is the principle which will lead to commitment, not just compliance and cooperation. This is the principle which will allow the police and our communities to repair our relationships. This is the principle we need to pay more attention to as we progress our profession and our communities into the future. Whether our officers live in a certain neighborhood or not, they are part of it for their at least their entire workday, and many officers will end up shopping, going to restaurants, maybe even sending their children to school in those neighborhoods and in the areas they patrol. If that officer is in your neighborhood, they are a part of the community at least for the time they are there. Oddly enough, as we try to talk about how out of touch we believe law enforcement is, it's one of the very few professions that actually each member of those patrol units, the men and women, the doers who go out there and do the job, They are in contact with every segment of that community. Most members of communities have very little experience with other parts of the town. Where I live, there's a north side, northeast, northwest, south, southeast, southwest. Law enforcement members are the only ones that spend significant time in every segment of that community. So they do have an understanding of what's going on throughout their communities. So principle number 8 states to recognize always the need for strict adherence to police executive functions and to refrain from even seeming to usurp the powers of the judiciary, of avenging individuals or the state, and of authoritatively judging guilt and punishing the guilty. This principle speaks to the aspect of the police becoming judge and jury. The current discussion regarding how an individual should not be given a death sentence for stealing cigarettes is way off base. The shooting of suspects is mostly preceded by a deliberate and aggressive refusal to follow specific directions. Remember, we mentioned early, as a society, we are not only saying it's okay, but we're almost telling our young folks that not that they just have the right to, but they have a duty to refuse and resist law enforcement both verbally and physically. That is unacceptable. Once again, the reason we have the discussion in this manner is it's an easy argument to make and an emotional one to claim that police are acting as judge, jury, and executioners. Has this happened in the past? Yes, we know it has, and not a single police officer or police agency tried to protect those who were wearing the uniform and violated our oath to protect. We need to remain vigilant to ensure this principle remains on the minds of all of our citizens and in our profession. Now, acknowledging that we know this has happened and that law enforcement has taken the correct stance in those instances when it was a clear and blatant violation of our oath is not to say that even one incident is too many. We want to make it a zero non-occurring incident, meaning this does not happen. So this brings us to the 9th and final principle, and it says to recognize always that the test of police efficiency is the absence of crime and disorder and not the visible evidence of police action in dealing with them. So this final principle is a difficult one to fathom because basically it puts police in a position which no other profession has, even though I think healthcare should, which means that law enforcement is designed to put themselves out of business. Knowing this is the pinnacle of success, we also know it is difficult, most likely not attainable, especially without principle number 7 being successful. We can't even remotely prevent crime if we aren't reminded of each other's responsibilities in this equation. One of the difficult aspects for this is in a world which depends on hard numbers, we tend to track our police through arrest numbers and not through a community which is committed to the mission, i.e. with a lack of crime. We're certain not to achieve this as long as our leadership, law enforcement, city, county, federal, etc., continue to not discuss the crimes in our neighborhoods and their source. Our citizens can't help us prevent crime if they do not know what they are looking for. And right now, a prime example in my community is the discussion of gangs. When we ask our leadership about gangs in the community, they will try to downplay it and state, well, we only have about a dozen nationally recognized gangs. And then, you know, if you counted the other small, non-affiliated, well, the number goes into the 30s. Well, we have to remind ourselves, how do you think the outlaws became a gang? They didn't just wake up and were a nationally recognized gang. They worked for another gang. They were local. They didn't have national recognition until they got to a point where that's what they attained. So these smaller gangs that we're downplaying, they have an opportunity to become on a national level. And I think we're confusing don't sweat the small stuff with don't address it. That statement, don't sweat the small stuff, doesn't mean ignored. It means don't get overworked, but you have to address it. And the easiest way to understand this is the avalanche didn't just happen overnight. It started with the first snowflake. We have got to pay attention, acknowledge, and address these small local gangs. So when we look at these 9 principles, they really spend a good bit of time of talking about how law enforcement and the community have to work together. How as law enforcement, we have to allow our community to understand openly, honestly, and informed what we do, how we do it, so that they have the ability to properly approve of what we're doing. So these 9 principles should be displayed in every police station, in both the lobby for every citizen to see and in the back areas where our law enforcement personnel congregate. So there's a reminder to everyone what is needed to have a safe community for all law-abiding citizens. This document again lays out the responsibility for law enforcement professionals and the community members. Until we know and understand our individual responsibility, we cannot have proper accountability. So we've gone through the 9 Peelian principles. I recommend you look them up. They're very easy to find. There's no variation in how they're stated. They're pretty solid and consistent. Get familiar with them. Start having a conversation as to what they really mean for every member of our community. Because again, this isn't law enforcement's job. It's not the citizen's job. It's everyone's job and responsibility. So our next podcast, we will discuss force and de-escalation from, once again, a researched and informed position. And I think we'll understand better what our officers have truly been trained to do and what they have been doing more resembles and falls in line with de-escalation and nowhere near force as it is defined properly. So remember, as you look to correctly embrace the warrior ethos, specifically the cognitive warrior, ask yourself, are you doing the right thing at the right time, in the right way, and for the right reasons, and continue to be the reader, the writer, the thinker, and the fighter when needed. Until next time, stay safe, stay alert, and stay informed. This has been the Cognitive Warrior Podcast, and we want to thank Audacity for their open source podcast recording software. Theme music from filmmusic.io, The Descent by Kevin MacLeod, at incompetech.com, a license CC by creativecommons.org/license, and the Gallagher Westfall Group for their leadership test and the reader, writer, thinker, fighter.